course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, Dave. We're joined, as always, by our other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Hey, you're not doing too shabby. Found me a fun little idol in my basement. Think I'm going to mess with that later, see what happens.
Yeah, it's always fun to explore new items, see what becomes of it. So, speaking of new items, we are reviewing the movie Yellow Eyes, which is out now on Screambox. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Before we get there, Ike, did you watch anything else this week?
Well, let's see. I watched, we are still on our rewatch of The Office, obviously not horror related. Other than that, I've been watching some Ghost Adventures, still on a little bit of a ghost kick. But really, other than that, not a whole lot in terms of horror movies. But I feel like I'm going to start ramping up on the horror movies here soon because we are almost in September.
That's right. Me too. I have actually saw a couple things on Screambox when I was scrolling to watch. I thought, ooh, I'm going to come back and watch that. I've had the first dose of pumpkin spice for the year and bought my first new Halloween decoration. So I think I'm ready to roll. So I foresee me diving into watching a bit more here in the near future. So stay tuned for that. But until we get there, let's take a break and we'll come back with news, birthdays, etc. So stick around.
Make sure you subscribe to Listen to Their Screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams, that is Listen, the number two in Screams, and you can find us there. Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spread the news. Spread the news. Spread the news.
And welcome back with the news. All right, starting us off here, Welcome to Derry has officially been renewed for a second season, which will be set in 1935. No release date has been given yet, but this does kind of follow what the creators have been talking about for a little while. The whole concept, I guess, is that obviously Pennywise comes in cycles. So, you know, the fun time here is that every cycle is so many years. And so this is the previous cycle to what we saw in the first season. So we'll hopefully continue to see that pop up, and it'll be interesting. It being in 1935, this is a Great Depression time and everything else. So very excited. I think this will be a good time.
Yeah, I love the first season. So, yeah, very much looking forward to a second season. Nice to have the confirmation. I mean, I kind of assumed with the success of the first season that they would have it, but it's nice to have an official confirmation and know that it's rolling.
Yep. Absolutely. They got the ball rolling, and soon enough, we will have the spooky, scary demon guy, Pennywise, you know, nipping at our earbuds. So we'll be talking about that here soon, I hope. But all right, and then some unfortunate news. On August 16th, Hayden Panettiere did pass away at the age of 36. She will always be remembered by horror fans for playing Kirby Reed in Scream 4, 5, and 6. But she obviously has acted her entire life with a varying degree of, you know, what she did. I remember the first thing I ever saw Hayden Panettiere in was Malcolm in the Middle. She played a side character. And I when I was younger, I would watch Malcolm in the Middle after school. And it was on Spike TV. And they had
there's a blast from the past. Spike TV.
I'm dating myself a little bit, I guess, but yeah, because Spike TV does not exist anymore. But Spike TV had it, what do they call it? It was a it was like a marathon, and they would do it every day after school. And then obviously series ended years ago, but they just did the revival, and I don't think they got her back for it. But no, I love that show, and she was great, and she's my favorite characters. And obviously she's great in all kinds of other stuff, but that's just my first memory of her.
Yeah, I see. Man, I don't know. Probably the first thing that I really I can remember seeing her in was Remember the Titans when she was young, and she was so good in that. So good in that. I mean, of course, that's a great movie anyway. But she's done, I mean, she's acted. I mean, when I was looking, I was reading on her, and I mean, she started like at 4 or 5 years old. She was doing soap operas as a child, but she had her actually was in her first commercial like at 11 months or something like that. I mean, so she's literally pretty much had been acting her entire life. So, and I don't know. I mean, we don't want to get all into it. She's had a rough life. I don't know. It looked like maybe things were on the upturn for her, but I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. There's not been any official news out on cause of death, but it's worrisome. Obviously, when someone passed away at 36, even you know, either way, there's it's not meant to be. You're not, you know, that's not a full life, but I don't know. I was so happy to see her, you know, come back to the Scream world, because I know, you know, people have mixed reviews about Scream 4. We have mixed reviews about Scream 4, but I thought she was a highlight of Scream 4.
Yeah.
And, so it was nice to have her come back and, you know, be back in it and stuff and see her, you know, start, I mean, she was starting to work quite a bit more and do things and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. It's one of those things you see it and you just, you're like, eh. You like triple check that to make sure that's not just, you know, someone being ridiculous online, because it doesn't sound right or it doesn't feel right it was. So we report this stuff, but it's, I hate reporting the passings, cause it's just so heartbreaking, but it's also, you know, we got to remember, right. Remember her and for what she contributed, none of us knew her personally, but we can speak to what she meant to us professionally and with her job. And, so we can honor her that way, but continue to watch those movies, enjoy her work and what she, you know, did and sacrificed for that. And so, yeah, it's too bad, but it's, hopefully we don't get the string like we sometimes get, right? Where you have a celebrity death and some people joke it comes in threes so hopefully we don't have any report for a while beyond this one.
That would be ideal. So we will, we'll keep our fingers crossed for that one. But for now, our thoughts are with her family. We will remember her fondly, and we will watch her movies in remembrance of her. So.
Yeah, it's so weird because I'm at this precarious age now where people, like, there was another passing that most people wouldn't know. I don't even know her last name off the top of my head. Her name was Janie, and she was on in Indiana. She was on WTTV Channel 4. She did she was one of the morning cartoon shows, right? Or, you know, she had puppets and sang and all, you know, just one of those little things. When every area had their little, you know, kids hosts and horror hosts and everything. And I mean, I grew up watching her and whatever else, and she passed. And it's, so I'm at that weird age where all these people who helped shape who I am are very, you know, if they're still alive or very elderly or, you know, passing or going to be passing. And they, it's wild because it's the ones that you really impacted you, really affected you, really helped shape you, which these guys do. Man, it's heartbreaking when they pass. And I've had a few celebrities hit me like that, you know, when they've passed. I mean, it's like losing a family member. It's a peculiar, I don't know, it's a peculiar thing to experience, right? Because you don't know them personally, but they were such, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like Janie, she was a literally part of my day every day for years growing up. So it's like you feel like you know them in this weird way. But I'm at this unfortunate age where they're starting to pass, you know, just naturally because of their age. And it's It's like, oh, I can't. I mean, I'm not saying, hey, pick Mary, one of those, but you know, it's like, oh, I don't want that. I can't handle that when, oh, it's too much.
It is strange because, you know, one of the weird, I guess, one of the things that we do, you know, is we oftentimes develop sort of a interpersonal relationship with people, you know, people that are famous and whatnot. And it's very common. I mean, a lot of people have, you know, very close leanings. They're like, oh, you know, hey, I'm excited to see such and such person, or, you know, I'm excited to, you know, see this, you know, character do this. And, you know, and then when things happen, it's like, oh, wow, like, okay, this person's gone now. And you're like, okay, well, I'll never see that character again. And, you know, you kind of have that interpersonal relationship where you don't know them personally, but you know them through film, you know them through movies or music. And so it is a strange, strange thing. And,
you know, they're the arts, right? They're emotional. Yeah. They rely on the senses and right. And feelings. So that's, you know, what it is. And I mean, obviously some people cross the lines and make it very, in a very unhealthy thing.
Right.
And, you know, or a very illegal thing, but, I think as artists, they would be very proud and very honored that they touch people like that. Right. And most of them say that. So, you know, I mean, it does make sense, right? Because unfortunately, sometimes these people, you almost are quote unquote spending more time with them than you are some of your own family.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it is what it is. But anyway, it's a ramble. But it's just, I'm at that age where these people who were, you know, whatever, 30 so years, you know, 20 to 30 years or more older than me, who were doing these things in their prime when I was a kid, are now getting to that age where they're going to start, you know, they are passing or will pass. And it's very weird when, you know, celebrities pass, you do feel sad, right? You're like, oh, I like that celebrity and, or that person. And it's, but when it's someone that you're really connected with or a fan of, and they pass it, it's a different level. So.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And, you know, I promise we'll stop talking about the sad here, but
that's right.
I look to my left and I have all my Pop Funkos, and a lot of them are Dragon Ball Z related. And the guy who made Dragon Ball Z was a guy named Akira Toriyama, and he passed away 3 or 4 years ago now. And when that happened, man, I was like, oh my God, this is insane. Like, that was a huge part of my childhood. That one hit me really hard because when I was like, I mean, I was young, I was like a kid. Like, I watched that, you know, that's been around since the 90s. And, you know, he was not that old. I mean, he was in his 50s, I think. But yeah, when he passed away, I was like, oh my God, you know, I was like, this is crazy. This is my childhood. But, like you said, it's always crazy because you have those characters or those people that you like really watch, you really love, and you're like, oh, they'll never die. And then when they eventually do, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. But in some ways they are semi-immortal, right? Because
yeah,
their works will live on forever. And, yeah, that's, you know, I mean, I guess that's the one good thing, right? You can always try to reconnect by watching and everything else. So whatever, let's do a palate cleanse and get on some more positivity.
That's true. But all right, we're gonna move on from our news. That is it. We have some upcoming birthdays and anniversaries. We're gonna start with our first birthday here, August 20th, 1974. We have Misha Collins, who played Castiel in Supernatural. Obviously, we're huge Supernatural fans here. Love, love, love Supernatural. And Cass is one of the best characters in that show. It's crazy to think that he wasn't introduced until a few seasons into the show. Yeah. But once he was introduced, it was very hard not to imagine the show without him. So
yeah, and it was not intended to be a long term character. It was just supposed to have an arc and gone and. You couldn't do it. You couldn't get away from me. But, and, yeah, I think part of that, obviously, it's a testament to Misha is just a good guy. You know, you read things about him and he's just a genuinely nice guy. He's very active, in, you know, political things, but also just, you know, whatever, common decency, human rights things. And, you know, very grounded, because he was born in Russia. At one point in time when he was a kid, he's talked about his family was poor. They slummed in an abandoned office building. He lived there for a while and stuff. And, you know, you hear stories about him, and he's a very grounded person. He has a very keen sense of reality. Doesn't, you know, let his fame, you know, shape who he is. And he's a funny guy, right? All these guys in Supernatural, just, they're hilarious. Especially when you get them all together and you watch clips of them at conventions. They're just goofballs.
Yeah, they really are. I've seen a couple of those videos, but they're also some of the bloopers and stuff, you know, from like Supernatural itself. And they're all just a bunch of, I mean, they act like kids.
Yes. Plus, it didn't get talked about, but Misha did a damn good job in Gotham.
Yeah, he played Harvey Dent, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And he was good. Gotham was, I mean, I don't know what it lasted. What did it last? 5 seasons? 4 seasons? But yeah, very good. Didn't get talked about enough. Not horror, but Gotham. Fun series. But
yeah, I've seen some of it, but I've not watched all of it. So I need to go back and watch through Gotham.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, happy birthday, of course, to Misha Collins.
Oh, hold on. Before on DC, I didn't mention that one thing I did watch, not horror related, is the New Lantern series debuted.
Oh yeah, I did. I saw that they started putting it out. I've not watched it yet, but
yeah,
I've heard it's good.
Watched the first episode. It was fun. I love it. But I love Green Lantern and the Green Lantern gore. So I'm very into it. I'm very hyped for it. So yeah, just signed up there. Okay.
But very good. We'll have to check that out. But moving on to August 20th of 1962, we have James Marsters, who, of course, played Spike in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer series. It's been a long time since I've watched Buffy. I need to go back and watch it. Obviously, I remember this character. Yes, I remember his character, and I remember the old series, and he did a very good job. Spike was a pretty pivotal character. I'm pretty sure he got his own show, didn't he?
No, that was Angel.
Is that Angel? Okay.
Angel, but I believe Spike popped up in that too. Spike was a big character. He had his own comic run and everything for a while. But I don't know. James Marsters, I think he's done some other things. He was in an episode of Supernatural. But he, I think he pops up and stuff, but nothing that prominent, because I don't know. He's just Spike. You see him and he's Spike. But right. He's very good at Spike. Spike was a fun character, one of those. To watch him evolve from, you know, this horrible evil vampire to a lovable vampire.
That's true. Very true. But all right. Well, happy birthday to James. And we will now jump to a this is always a fun one. I always like when we get these ones that are like from over 100 years ago. we have August 20th of 1890, we have H.P. Lovecraft, the horror author known for things in the Cthulhu universe, and the whole concept of reanimators from one of his stories. There's plenty of things that are kind of in that realm, in that ballpark. Lovecraft had some very interesting concepts, and he kind of pioneered the idea of like unknown horror, right? A horror that is unimaginable, or that is basically so far above the plane of existence. Like all of the things of like Cthulhu, it's like very rarely is Cthulhu actually like a direct monster or like a direct influence. It's more of a how that character influences other characters around. It's a fun time.
Yeah, and he's also one of those that people are like, H.P. Lovecraft, I don't know, maybe you've seen more of his work done in movies and different things than what you realize, because his stuff, his work has been adapted so many different times, and it's still being, right? They're doing a new something or other with the Herbert West Reanimator, something new in the works for them. I can't remember what it is. I don't know, mixed feelings on that. But anyway, because I love the original so much. But still constantly, you know, adapting his work. So they'll probably never stop.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll keep going. In the meantime, we'll move on to our next birthday. So we talked about her a lot already, but August 21st, 1989, Hayden Panettiere, known as, of course, as Reed, Kirby Reed in Scream 4, 5, 6. You know, we won't dwell on this too much because we did talk about her quite a bit, and, you know, it's nothing negative. It's just, you know, it is obviously, you know, a hard conversation to have right now. Yeah, she just passed, and it is her birthday coming up here soon, tomorrow, in fact. But yeah, you know, obviously she's great. Talked about her a lot, and she will be dearly missed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, nothing more to say, but it's peculiar that this seems to happen semi-regularly, right? A death, and then soon after, right around their birth. I don't know. Seems like I notice that trend sometimes when we report this stuff. You know, you can see it right in front of you. That, oh, that's peculiar. Just not saying there's anything, you know, evil to work, but it's just peculiar.
Absolutely. But all right, we're going to jump now to August 22nd of 1920. We have Ray Bradbury, of course, a fantasy and sci-fi author. Probably one of his most well-known works is Fahrenheit 451. Mm-hmm. Definitely a timely book and reminder of our current society. But Ray Bradbury is a fantastic author, and I think really influenced the modern sci-fi and political horror and political science fiction kind of genre.
Yeah, I mean, in high school, I took a course. It was only, you know, a course for a quarter or whatever you call it, 9 weeks. We did nine. It was called a 9 weeks. It'd been a quarter, you're right, half a semester. But it was a literature elective class, and it was on fantasy, sci-fi, horror literature, and we spent a lot of time on Ray Bradbury. And we talked about H.P. Lovecraft, but a lot of time on Ray Bradbury because, I mean, the course, you could do a whole course just on it. I'm sure people have. I'm sure their college course is probably just on Ray Bradbury and his works, as there should be. I've always loved Ray Bradbury, and again, one of those guys. A lot of stuff out there that you've seen that you probably people aren't even aware that it was a Ray Bradbury work to begin with, right? There's lots of that out there. Because like Fahrenheit 451, right? It's been adapted a few times, but didn't they just, wasn't there a Michael B. Jordan version not too long ago or something?
Yeah, there was. I think it was an HBO, I'm pretty sure it was HBO production, but I heard that it was pretty good and that it had like decent reviews, but it was like a short series, I believe.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, again, several people would watch that probably because of Michael B. Jordan and whatever, and they're not aware of the source material. So I always implore people to do a little research on what they watch and go back and dig in and give a little time to the source material, right? And tip your hat to them.
Yeah, absolutely. But all right, happy birthday, Ray Bradbury. We're going to now jump to our anniversary, movie anniversaries here. We have August 21st, 1981, An American Werewolf in London. Such a great movie. I think we actually recently talked about this in conjunction with another werewolf movie.
No, it was The Fly, remember?
Yeah, The Fly, that's right.
Because we were talking about transformation scenes. But
and this has one of the best werewolf transformation scenes of all time.
It does.
Just super spooky.
Yeah, one of my favorite werewolf movies. It's just so good. I mean, again, it seems like this pops up all the time. We'll get to talk about it, and rightfully so. I love this movie. Everybody should go give it a watch or a rewatch.
Absolutely. Need to do that because I've not watched that one in a little bit, but American Werewolf one is great. Great vampire movie. Werewolf movie, Jesus Christ. Different
right
animal.
Right in the title, man. Right in the title.
Right in the title. Good Lord. I was thinking about... I was thinking about, do you remember that movie? It's like Dracula 2000 or something like that.
Yeah.
It was so stupid. But yeah, no, that popped into my head for some reason. I don't know why. But
was the one that Leslie Nielsen, the guy from Naked Gun, was it like Dracula Dead and Loving It or something like that? Or
yeah, something like that.
Dracula's been done so many times in so many ways.
He really has.
It's fun. But they're all entertaining in their own ways, right?
They are.
Somehow, in some way, it works.
Like, you know, they have, like, Blackula and the one with, what was his name? I thought it was Eddie Murphy. I thought Eddie Murphy did
it. Yeah, Eddie Murphy did. I don't know if it was Dracula. He did a vampire movie, yeah.
But he looks like Dracula.
Yeah. But again, that again, we've talked about that's the prototype look. But
Yes.
Anyway, yes, American Werewolf in London, wonderful movie, not a vampire movie, but
not a vampire movie. Got that confused, but
in case you don't know, it's set in London.
It is. It is. It's absolutely set in London. I don't think they could have guessed that one.
But the werewolf is—he's not British. He's American. I mean,
he is British.
It's all right there in the title, right? An American Werewolf in London. It really just states what you're gonna what you got coming.
But good old American Werewolf in London. I need to go rewatch that. It's all right. We're gonna jump now from that to August 21st, 2024. So many years later, we have Scream. Scream is great. What can I say about it? A great independent horror film, you know, made by the folks who made Terrifier. You know, the whole concept is pretty great. And really it opened up a limitless possibilities for, you know, sequels and stuff like that. They are making a sequel, and they are also making a board game.
That's right. That's right.
So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Again, you know, I don't know. It's like we carefully pick the like more modern movies we talk about because there's so many. But Stream, yeah, I think, you know, we reviewed it. Stream's it's a favorite of the show, so we got to give it a shout out. And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to Stream 2.
Yeah, absolutely. But, all right, moving on to August 22nd of 1986, Night of the Creeps. This one I have never seen, so I will have to defer to Dave for this one.
So it's got Tom Atkins in it, right, from Halloween 3, and it's. Oh, I don't know. He's basically these alien, what do you call it, parasites, I guess, come down and infect people. I think I'm pretty sure if I remember, they go in the mouth. But they infect people, and so people are becoming, you know, possessed by these aliens. And I think it's all began by like a group of kids or teenagers or high schoolers or something that kind of start to fight the aliens. And it's good fun. It's a good 1986 style horror movie. Very fun. Everybody should get, you know, give it a fun, especially because, again, Tom Atkins, Halloween 3, love him.
Yeah, that's a good time. So the 80s were a fun time for these movies.
Yes, they were.
Speaking of good 80s movies, released on the same exact day, August 22nd, 1986, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which really leaned into the goofiness of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I will forever say the first one it's such a good movie. Right, to me, it's almost a perfect little horror movie. But man, if I want to sit down and watch a Texas Chainsaw movie to have fun and really get that Texas Chainsaw, I'm going to 2 every time. I'm not saying 2 is a better film, but to me, part 2 is it's more fun to watch and it's more of a comfort film for me. And Texas Chainsaw 2 might be my favorite of the Texas Chainsaw franchise, probably is. So if I'm going to sit down, if I had to just watch one Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's part 2 almost every time.
No, absolutely. I have a weird thing with the Texas Chainsaw movies where it's like, obviously the first is the best.
Yeah. It's a great one, move.
Right. It's a perfect grindhouse film. It is a very interesting take on kind of the whole horror genre at the time. But then you have the second movie, which is so fun, right? Like it is a perfect fun horror movie. It has the perfect level of just absolute impossibleness, and it really expands some of the silliness and lore from the first movie, because there was a little bit of it, right?
Yeah,
you know, there's a little bit of it, because when they're, you know, the old man's trying to kill the lady with a hammer, but he can't hold the hammer, you know.
Yeah,
in the first movie, like, that's obviously kind of supposed to be goofy. But then you have the second film that really just leans into it. And then the third movie was weird, because that was the one with Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one was, of course, I have a soft spot for the fourth one, because it's one with Matthew McConaughey, and it's so hilarious.
Yeah, that's the one that didn't get released for a while.
Yeah.
Because they didn't think it would do any good. But then once Matthew McConaughey, and I think wasn't Renee Zellweger in it too? When they when they really got big, they were like, oh well, we're gonna put this out now. But yeah, two's the one. It's again one of those things. It establishes so much of the lore of Texas Chainsaw, right? There's the it really dives into the family and expands the family and the characters, and right, this is like this is the one, right, with the iconic, the dinner scene, right, that everybody pictures with all a bunch of them at the table, right? That's two, isn't it?
There's one in the first one, but it doesn't have, it's not as elaborate, right? The first one is just, like, her sitting at the head, the Sally Harkness or whatever her name is.
Yeah. But this is the one, I think, where it's got, like, a bunch of them, and it's kind of chaotic, and they're all, right, they're just...
I believe so. I think the second one's because they're like in that underground bunker or whatever.
Yeah. And I don't know. To me, just too, it just captures the feel of what the franchise, to me, ultimately became, right? Maybe.
Yeah.
Not, you know, I don't know. But it's just fun. I love it. It's a fun movie to watch.
It is. But, all right. We are on our last anniversary, and this one's a fun one, too. August 25th of 1939, The Wizard of Oz. It's fun to think about, but like back in the day, like something like this, like if you watch it today, The Wizard of Oz is not a scary movie. But back in the day, given the sort of context of the time, this was a scary movie. I mean, it had a witch, had flying monkeys. I mean, it was legitimately kind of a spooky ambience. And it's interesting to think about.
it is, and this again, we've talked about this multiple times, and this is will forever be a hill I will die on. Wizard of Oz has become almost this child thing now, or this kid thing, right? It's they make it all fun and everything, and Dorothy and the Tin Man and all that skipping down the yellow brick road. But keep in context what happened here when this. I mean. These weren't a Tin Man, and these were people who were turned into these things, and then you know again you had witches and flying monkeys and a wizard and you know traveling to another world via a tornado and all this and that and you know and asbestos or snow, I mean whatever they was they and like you said the content is 1939. If we are calling Universal Movies horror, which you should, because they are the horror of the time. Wizard of Oz is the same, because to me, it has all the same elements as Universal movies. There's monsters, there's, you know, there's witches and witchcraft and supernatural things and whatnot. It is a fantasy horror movie, a fantasy horror tale. It doesn't matter how much they've marketed it to me. Because again, Universal Monsters, it's almost right. They market that on everything, and it's because they're not scary anymore, right? Because of, well, I mean, depending on your age, I guess. But
right.
But it is still to me horror. It was horror of the time. I remember watching it as a kid. There was parts that freaked me out. I mean, I hate the fucking flying monkeys scared me as a kid when I watched it on TV. They were just creepy. And so yeah, I mean, is it Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2? No.
No.
But for 1939, it's what horror was.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I don't care how you market it, and I don't care how you paint the box and wrap the bow around it, it's still at its core to me horror, and I will forever die on that. It's not a modern horror, but it is whatever, I don't know. We need a name for this too. We always whatever you want to call it, you know, foundational horror or something like that, right? It's in that evolution of horror. This is what it was at that time, right? We talked about H.P. Lovecraft and his writing and stuff. This is the horror of the time. And then you got into movies and you got the Universal Monsters and things. That was the horror of its time. You know, you go back, way back, you know, campfire stories. That was the horror of its time. There's always been horror of some sort. And it's not take off the glasses. It's not the horror we have now because it's evolved. Changed into what it is now and the different styles, but they weren't going to make a slasher in 1939. Wasn't going to happen. Wasn't even a concept. Couldn't have got it made. Couldn't have got it on the screen. So, you know, there's movies like that to me. So,
right.
I don't know. Some people have a very defined definition of horror, but horror is very widely based and they're very, depends on your time period. Right, because it's different stuff, but yeah. I'm not. We've talked about this with Wizard of Oz last time, so I'm not going to go for it. Maybe sometime we just need to do a whole damn episode on it.
No, absolutely. I think that there. I'm trying to think of like a good term for that generation of horror, but it for sure is one of the situations where horror has changed so much just over the last 10 years, much less the last 100 years. You know, things like Nosferatu, The Symphony of the Night, you know, which is about 100, which is over 100 years old now, was horror for the time.
Yeah.
And when we watch it now, you know, it's eerie, sure, but it doesn't hold the same value that it used to hold because of how things have changed in the social, you know, pop culture zeitgeist.
Yeah, you have to think about what it would have been like in 1939 to sit in the theater, watch The Wizard of Oz. You didn't have television, right? You didn't have that. You had radio. You know, you didn't have TV. You went to see a movie. That is all you, the only experience you got like this. It was already this marvel, right? Because movies were just really starting to boom and take off. I mean, they have been for a few years, but this is where it's really getting there. And you didn't have it at home. So you had to go to this place and watch this on this big screen being projected to see that witch, to see those flying monkeys, to see, you can't tell me that it was not scary to them at the time. And yes, there are parts, right, where it's not, and it's, you know, things are, you know, there's lighter parts. That's part of it. But for 1939, it absolutely would have been scary to these people because that was, there was nothing beyond that, right? You couldn't look at it and say, oh, this is silly. I've saw scarier in this other. Nah, you didn't have that. Movies, you know, this was a thing, right? I mean, just like seeing Frankenstein for the first time in a theater, and when he turns around and unveiled, yeah, people were scared because you had never seen anything like that. There was nothing to compare it to at the time. It had pushed the bar of terror at that time for what it was. And I know people look at it now and chuckle at these things, like, what? That's not scary. Okay, again, context. It's 1939. You don't have the last 90 years of TV and writing and movies to compare it to. Yeah, all that's obsolete. It doesn't exist. Not obsolete, but it doesn't exist. So yeah, if you look at it through the eyes of what all you can compare it to is anything that had been created up to that point in 1939. So but yeah, it's scary compared to all that stuff. Hell yeah, it's scary. It's just as scary as the Universal Monster movies. It's the same, you know, the same type of terror, really. So we look at so much stuff retroactively and want to relabel it, right? It is what it is. I'm not saying you can't, right? There's not, right? I guess you can market Wizard of Oz however the hell you want, but to me, I don't care. I always label it as having at its core, at its roots, being horror.
Yeah, so no, absolutely.
Sue me.
All right. I think that does it for our anniversaries. I think we got a lot to talk about there. So we're going to jump to our one upcoming release, which is exciting to hear. Insidious, Out of the Further, is coming to theaters on August 21st. And it is described as Gemma, a young mother raising her daughter in the house she grew up, discovers she can travel into the Further, where she possesses an ability to bring what lives there back to the real world. And we will be reviewing this movie next episode. Obviously, we love the Insidious franchise here. We have talked about every Insidious movie in some way, shape, or form. We reviewed The Red Door, and then through the process of that, we have talked about the other Insidious movies and ranked them. So it is it's exciting to see this one. This is kind of the first, and it's not necessarily even a spinoff, because I guess that's not the first. I guess the third movie was a spinoff because it didn't have Patrick Wilson's character. So this will be the second sort of spinoff from the original Insidious movies, which were based around Patrick Wilson and his family. I guess the Skeleton Key or whatever that fourth one was also a spinoff, perhaps.
Yeah, it'll be curious to see. You know, I mean, I'm not doubting it's probably going to be a fun movie, but it'll be curious to see how it performs. Right? What's the draw? Is it the Insidious, the storytelling? Or, you know, how much impact did Patrick Wilson and those characters have on it? So, but again, it's not like a whole new thing, right? There are ties to some of the old lore or whatever, but Yeah, it's exciting that they're continuing this on and doing things with it, and we'll see how it does and how it performs, and then we'll see what we think of it.
Yep, absolutely. But all right, that does it for all of our news, upcoming birthdays, anniversaries, and releases. We will take a quick break, but when we return, we will have our official review of Yellow Eyes. Stick around.
This is Wrestling Nostalgia, the podcast that dives into wrestling history. Hey, wrestling fans, I'm Dave Dynasty, and if you enjoy podcasts that are knowledgeable and history-driven, then Wrestling Nostalgia is for you. With great guests and fun interviews, there are over 200 episodes in our archives. We chat with several first-time guests and often cover topics not discussed on other podcasts. Look up Wrestling Nostalgia on your favorite podcast platform and visit all of our links at linktree.com/WrasslePod. That is linktr.ee/RASSLEPOD. And remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
Okay, and welcome back to Listen to the Screams. It is review time. We are reviewing the movie Yellow Eyes, written by Mickey Solis, directed by Jesse Corman, starring Nina Martins, Michael Konicki, and others. This movie was released on Screambox on August 18th, and of course it is still available there, as we're just a few days after that. So going into this movie, it sounded interesting, right? And but I kind of, you know, you read it and you're thinking, okay, I don't know, you know, it sounds okay. And then I started watching it. I didn't have expectations. I didn't know what to think. And the way it started, it was, you know, at the beginning, kind of a little slow, not horrible. But it was like, okay, get to something. And surprisingly, when it was all said and done, I really enjoyed this movie more than I didn't really have a lot of expectations per se, but I enjoyed it more than I expected to. Cause when it got to the matter, man, it really went. I thought it was fun, man. It had, you know, some creepy parts, some scary parts. I thought, you know, the effects that they did, the look of the possessed, whenever people were possessed, I thought they had a great look about them. The yellow eyes part is very, very, it adds an element to, right, being possessed, that the yellow eyes. Added some, you know, some lore and things with, you know, symbols of protection and different things. And it did give a story of this relic, which that's not a spoiler, because it was in the description that these people find in this house. It did give, you know, some lore to what it was, what it was supposed to be. But the relic itself, it looked cool, had a creepy look, had some really pretty cool effects when it got to the meat of the matter on things that, because there were some things happening early in the movie, like, what is going on here? What exactly is he doing to this relic? And you kind of got to see, right? Because there's a lot of focus on eyes in the movie in different ways. But again, it's a movie that I don't know. I didn't know going into it what to expect. I thought, oh, okay, here we go. You almost think, it's something else, right? They find something. Of course, somebody gets possessed. It's another possession movie. We've seen a million of these. And I'm not saying this one did anything to really up the bar or set itself completely apart. We've seen lots of possession movies. We've seen lots of people getting possessed because of relics or items or what have you. But like we have said before, they didn't set out to redefine the genre. They just knew what they wanted to make. They told a decent little story. It was really good, you know, well acted, well shot. The effects were good. Everything worked, and they just made a nice little movie to tell a story. And sometimes, again, it's okay just to make a movie, tell your story. You don't have to come up with something groundbreaking. Just do what fits your story. And I think they did what fit their story here. They didn't try to push anything. They didn't try to throw in anything off the wall or goofy that just didn't fit because they wanted something different in it. They made a nice, fun, just a little possession movie. And if you like demonic possession movies and, you know, movies about supernatural and demons and lore and relics and what have you, this is a good movie to watch, I think. And especially for it being a Screambox movie. I thought this is a really kind of stood out as a as some of these releases, on their platform. They always have, some fun, solid movies. But this is one that I almost watched parts of it. I'm not saying it would have succeeded, but as I watched parts of it, I thought, man, this would be a cool movie to see on a theater screen. Because of some of the effects and some of the things and looks. So, all right, Ike, what'd you think of Yellow Eyes?
No, I 100% agree. I think that this movie, had it been released in theaters with a little bit of push, with a little bit of advertising, I think it potentially could have been good. I think that it could potentially had a good draw. I think that it has a pretty standard formula as far as possession movies go, right? There's sort of a formula that you kind of expect when it comes to that kind of a movie. You kind of have this idea of like, okay, yeah, you have this old relic, right? Which again was in the description of the movie, so that's not a spoiler. Yeah, this idea of an old relic, which is not an unheard of trope within the possession concept, right? The exorcism, or I'm sorry, The Exorcist had a relic in the beginning of the movie that kind of projected the movie narratively. So this is kind of a similar situation where you have a relic that sort of projects the movie narratively. But one of the things that I think this movie did a really good job of, and it's not necessarily a spoiler, is that this is not your typical demon. This is a pretty non-standard type of possession. And there's actually a pretty interesting interaction with a priest in the movie that I thought was pretty realistic. If this kind of a situation were to happen in real life, I feel like how the priest in the movie reacted to the request was kind of normal. No, I think everything was really great about this movie. I thought that the small cast did a really good job, right? There wasn't a whole lot of people. There wasn't a whole lot of moving parts. It was pretty short form and just kind of held everybody into a singular location. The movie primarily revolved around a single area, so it was really easy to kind of get a lay of the land and was not confusing because sometimes you watch movies and you're like, okay, where the hell are we? But this had a really easy layout, really easy to follow plot, had a really easy to follow backstory, and had some pretty gory moments. And you don't typically get those with your typical standard possession movies. Generally, with possession movies, it's pretty much just well, let's just get them possessed, maybe throw up some pea soup, and we'll go from there. But no, I thought the movie did a really great job. And I think that, had this movie been an actual theatrical release with the right marketing, I think it could have potentially made some good money. It had all of the right, it had all the right, what's the word I'm looking for? It had all the right factors, right?
Yeah, elements. Yeah.
Yeah, the elements, there you go. Had all the right elements, had a decent cast and crew. I think the cast did a really good job. None of them were weak performances. They all performed their characters extremely well. You had a filming direction that made sense, a story that made sense, and really an above average concept that, to me, does set it apart from your standard possession type movie, even though it follows a pretty standard possession type story, if that makes sense. But in any case, great movie. I thought it was great. I think they did a really good job. I think this is a really big win for Screambox for those who watch on the Screambox platform.
And it did have a no spoilers, but did have an intriguing ending that makes
Yeah.
you think, makes you wonder. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. Again, I didn't know what to think. We watched some movies recently that were bigger releases that were like, eh, whatever,
Yeah.
and this one though, again, that's what happens, right? And something slips in and you really enjoy it. It's fun and it's what makes you appreciate the depth of horror, right? It's doesn't have to be this monumentous worldwide theatrical release to just be a good movie that you can watch, right? I mean, this is a release straight to Screambox. That was very, very enjoyable. More enjoyable than some of the big theatrical releases here recently. So not all of them, but
Yeah,
some of them.
some
That's right.
of them.
All right. And so I'm gonna rate this thing. Let's see. Again, not groundbreaking, so didn't reshape, but that's okay. We didn't have to. But I do feel slightly above just the standard fun. So I'm going to rate Yellow Eyes a 3.5 screams out of 5. Ike, how about you?
I do agree. I think that this movie was almost your standard run-of-the-mill possession type movie, but there were a few things that they did that really propelled it into the next level. So, absolutely, I think 3.5 out of 5 is a perfect rating for this. I do think had they maybe raised the stakes a little bit, maybe increase the potential body count, and maybe increased a couple of the other maybe some of the elements of like gore and stuff like that, we probably could have seen a 4, but still a solid movie. I think a 3.5 out of 5 is still pretty fair and pretty good score for a Screambox movie for sure.
Completely agree. So I highly recommend people go give Yellow Eyes a watch if you have not already. Again, available on Screenbox. Next episode, though, in theaters, Insidious: Out of the Further. We will be reviewing that movie. Until then, thank you to the wives for your support in what we do, and of course to you listeners and followers for your support as well. Be sure to subscribe to us on social media. We're on pretty much any platform. Just search for Listen to Their Screams. You will find us there and give us a follow. Before we close out, Ike, anything else you want to add?
Oh, let's see. Honestly, not a whole lot. I think everything is pretty much on the up and up. We got Insidious coming out. I'm excited for that. I'm always excited for a new Insidious film. We'll have to see how this one is. I honestly have not seen a whole lot of advertising and marketing for this movie.
Me neither. I had no clue. Honestly, I knew it was coming, but until I was like, okay, what are we reviewing this company? What I was looking like a couple of weeks ahead, right? What are we going to review this day? And then I saw, I was like, really? I didn't. I was like, I don't know. I guess I thought it was a little further out. I don't know. Kind of snuck up on me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really did. It snuck up on me. I was talking to Kayla and I was like, hey, did you know that the new Insidious movie's coming out this weekend? And she's like, yeah, I had seen that. She's like, I feel like I've not seen any trailers for it. Like, none before the movies we've gone to go see, nothing.
I don't think I have either. No, so should be fun, right? Away, getting ready to roll in September. September's a big month because, according to the world, that's when a lot of people officially usher in the spooky season. But
Yes.
to me, it's already there. But it's but people like to do it, right? Your pumpkin spices out. Spirit Halloweens are popping up. The leaves, if you were in the right place, will be turning, and things are happening. So this is what a lot of people watch a lot more horror, myself included, right? Well, I start watching my rewatches and things and get really getting that spirit. I'm super excited. Again, I love this stuff year round, and but it's a lot easier to get caught up in it when it's everywhere, right? When you go into stores and there's Halloween candy and there's whatnot, there's just you see the oranges and the browns and everything else. So this is a fun time of year, right? When the rest of the world joins us and celebrating this stuff. Of course, August, September, a big month. Ike, baby coming. Pretty,
Yeah.
pretty, pretty. That's going to be pretty crazy. Can't wait. We'll have to see when we can work him into the podcast and get an
That's
on-air debut for him.
right.
See, tell me, kid, what do you think of Yellow Eyes? No, but I'm sure there'll be a time. There'll be a time when there'll be a cry or a wail or a gag, giggle or something that'll make the cut, and you'll be able to document his first official podcast appearance. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it'll happen. But anyway, not in it. On top of that, your birthday coming up in September. I mean,
Yeah.
shoo, big month coming up. Gonna be fun.
And we have like a ton of other birthdays in our friend group, and there's
That's
oh,
right.
so many
September's a
birthdays.
loaded month.
It
Yeah,
is.
it's a really crazy. So, but good crazy, good fun crazy. Always good stuff. But looking forward to it, right? This again, what a wonderful time of year. But again, as we say, Spooktober's a year-round event. The Dead Kennedys have a great song called Halloween.
Yeah.
And again, I'm gonna jump on myself because I love the Dead Kennedys. But the premise of it's not so much that it's about Halloween specifically, but it's about right days like Halloween and other holidays. People let loose, they have fun, right? They dress up and they go out and they do that goofy and they do fun stuff and have a good time. And let their hair down and don't worry about preconceived stuff as much, right? And the whole premise of the song is why not all year? Why not just be wild and have fun and do your thing all year? With the it's got the great line in it. Let me see how's it go. Oh God, you can take your take your social expectations, shove them up your ass. That's a great line in the song, right? Because that's what it talks about, right? You're worried about what your boss thinks, or your wife thinks, or this person thinks all the other time, except for these set. Fuck that, people. Just have fun, do your thing all the time. Spooktober is a year-round event. But this is the time of the year when, I guess, the normal people join us. So anyway, off the soapbox. Yeah, let's see. I think we've hit everything, right? We're good. I'm trying to think. No. We have one more episode that will be in August before we'll officially be in September. So okay, we're not there
Yeah,
yet.
next week. Next
That's
will be
right.
our last one.
That's right. Okay, so there you have it. Then again, next episode, Insidious out of the further. Until then, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.